making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Another day, another dollar. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not a kid anymore.
I relied heavily on sticks and stones. Not so much sticks once I heard the Ramones. I got a job at
That was Sloan with I'm Not a Kid Anymore, and unfortunately, we aren't kids anymore. And of course, I like the line about the scariest thing about my Halloween is that November's rent is due. And it just about is, my friends. Welcome to this special homemade B-side episode from Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. And it's Halloween night, and I'm home alone, and I'm doing the scariest thing, and that's going over all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This is, if you're keeping score, the B-side of episode 147, of course, released yesterday. And what we generally do in these B-sides is all the things we couldn't cram into the main flagship two-hour show. So we're here to do the cleanup and get the rest of the dirty, nasty, disturbing news. And I guess just have a general uneasy feeling on this Halloween night. I haven't watched even any scary movies yet. But I've been reading a scary book. My man, Alan, appropriately enough, out in Nebraska, sent me the new book from Nick Bryant called The Franklin Scandal, published by Oregon's Trinday Books. And it's essentially about the Franklin Scandal. If you don't know what that is, go to franklinscandal.com. But it's essentially, like the subtitle of the book says, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. And so, that's where we are. And maybe one thing that did kind of cheer me up, I just posted a status on FBook asking what people are watching for Halloween. And we got a couple mentions of the World Series and USC getting beat by Oregon in whatever sport they may be referring to. We also got a mention of Shaun of the Dead, but the best one is probably that they're watching drunk people who should be arrested. So that cheered me up a little bit. but this is fitting, and this is what, again, the things we couldn't get to in the main show yesterday. And this directly ties in a way, with the subject or the topic, whether or not the specter of the Franklin scandal haunts this particular story. Published last Monday, October 26th, on MediaMonarchy.com, 52 children rescued in nationwide prostitution sting, 700 arrested. And I ask, and add a link to franklinscandal.com, can the specter of the Franklin scandal be far away? And something I'll mention right here is that I'm working on setting up an interview with Nick Bryant. I've made contact. He said he'll do it. We just now have to set up a time and do it. So again, franklinscandal.com. So this story now. 52 children rescued in nationwide prostitution sting, 700 arrested. And this was, again, last Monday the 26th, but over the last 3 days, in a nationwide crackdown on child prostitution. Almost 1,600 agents and officers took part in the raids, which followed investigations in 36 cities, according to the FBI, local law enforcement agencies, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which is at missingkids.com. Included in the arrest were 60 pimps, according to the FBI and local police officials. Authorities say the youngest victim was 10. In Southern California, 2 children were rescued in Riverside, and 4 adults were arrested, said Laura I. Miller, an FBI spokeswoman. 4 suspected customers of child prostitutes were arrested in Orange County. Quote, "It is repugnant that children in these times could be subjected to the great pain, suffering, and indignity of being forced into sexual slavery for someone else's profit." Quote, from Assistant Attorney General Lanny A. Brewer. He added that the latest raids show that the scourge of child prostitution still exists on the streets of our cities. The sweep was dubbed Operation Cross Country, and it's part of the Innocence Lost National Initiative by the FBI, started in 2003 to address child sex trafficking in the U.S. The initiative has rescued nearly 900 kids, led to the conviction of 510 pimps, madams, and their associates, and seized $3.1 million in assets, according to the FBI. Ernie Allen, president of National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, said, quote, "We're having an enormous impact on this business." Most of the recovered children have been girls who usually become victims of traffickers around the age of 12, Allen said. And he estimated that 100,000 children are still involved in sex trafficking in the U.S., adding that the problem is growing, partly because of the recession. As if all that isn't disturbing enough, again, how it ties into and what Nick Bryant exposes in the Franklin scandal is the cover-up at high levels. And we're not going to get into that right now, so again, I'm just... it's all kind of swirling around, and of course it's all appropriately Halloween. But there is a related piece from the New York Times that's fantastic, and again, you have to kind of give it to them when you look at one of the mainline news sites. It's a beautiful article and page. They've got their own produced video, and we're going to hear a clip from that in just a moment. But the article from the New York Times is called "Running in the Shadows: Recession Drives Surge in Youth Runaways." And wouldn't you know it, this New York Times article is set in Medford, Oregon.
Some kids are born on the street, and they grow up on the street, and they're good. They know how to survive. They're survivors.
Even more children are trying to learn how to survive on their own. Over the last 2 years, government officials have seen an increasing number of runaways. In places like Medford, Oregon, these kids walk a fine line between legal and illegal activity to get by.
At this place, like, not only was it my home, but at least it taught me a good experience.
Nikki Hall is 17 and squatting in a foreclosed house.
It would have been really a lot better if my parents could actually keep the house.
But her parents weren't able to keep the house. After her father had a triple bypass, the medical bills piled up. They missed one mortgage payment, then another. The house went into foreclosure. Then her parents moved to a trailer park a couple towns away. Nikki decided to stay to finish the school year, sometimes inviting friends over when she's lonely.
that's merely just the first minute of this New York Times video. It's up on their YouTube channel. It's about 7.5 minutes long. It's called When No One's Looking. So again, that's added as an addendum to the story that broke last Monday, October 26th, 52 kids rescued in nationwide prostitution sting with 700 arrested. We're going to move now to another mysterious, kind of interesting story. And this was something that happened last year. My original flashback link to this story goes back to May of 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. And that headline was, Cop Kills CIA Agent After Car Chase in Downtown Houston. So there's a new story from the Houston Press, HoustonPress.com. And of course, this is all about the man known as Roland Carnaby. So they call it Spy Story, Con Man, or Super Spook. And I add that what's the difference, really? But either way, Roland Carnaby wasn't supposed to meet his death on a Houston highway in a high-speed chase with the cops. Roland Carnaby was on the run, pulled over, going 75 and a 60. He panicked and taken off from the traffic cop and was now racing along Highway 288 at nearly 120 miles per hour with police officers right on his tail. A Houston Police Department officer named Charles Starks had stopped him driving his Jeep Commander a little before 10 a.m. on April 29, 2008. Roland Carnaby announced he was CIA and pulled out his credentials. Starks asked for a phone number to call to verify Carnaby's claims. Carnaby gave him one, but said that probably no one was there. When Starks asked to hold the CIA badge, Carnaby refused, citing national security issues. And we jump ahead, and the officers later claim, after they had, of course, blown him away, after this long, bizarre exchange, the officers later claimed that they saw Carnaby grab a, quote, dark and shiny object, end quote, that they thought was a gun. Turned out to be his BlackBerry, which was lying next to Carnaby's body as officers handcuffed him. Bleeding badly, Carnaby began kicking out blindly. His phone record showed he tried to frantically make several calls, but was only able to push random digits. He died before an ambulance could get him to the hospital. Conspiracy theories flooded the web, claiming the CIA or some foreign intelligence agency had assassinated Roland Carnaby. His friends and family swore Carnaby was the real McCoy and that he knew many CIA and FBI big shots as well as a host of local law enforcement officers. But the CIA and FBI denied ever employing him, and Houston Police Department Chief Harold Hurt and Harris County Sheriff Adrian Garcia publicly claimed they hardly knew the guy. Who was he? Everyone wondered. Was he really an international CIA officer killed in a routine traffic stop in Texas? A year and a half later, now the present, the Houston Press has obtained new info in the form of depositions from former intelligence officers that appears to establish that Roland Carnaby was the real deal, at least for part of his life. I have not gone through this full story, and I'm sure there's lots of stinky things there, but again, we give you the flashbacks to May of 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. Cop kills CIA agent after car chase in downtown Houston. And the most recent update I had was from July of this year. Carnaby's widow, Suze, claims husband was a member of the CIA. So again, this is new stuff from HoustonPress.com. Their stories, Spy Story, Con Man, or Super Spook. One thing we didn't do, but I do have the page up, before we get into the world of geopolitics, which, unless you've been under a rock, is complete and utter chaos, murder and mayhem and death and destruction and bombs and drones and misleaders worldwide. So let's do it right now. It's Halloween night. It's about 9 o'clock here in Portland, Oregon, glancing at Google News, and what's grabbing all the headlines is this supposed moderate that's dropped out of the New York race for House, something like that. And it's a war of the left and the right, the two phony wings. We've also got Halloween at the White House from the Washington Post. The Obamas, I believe, giving out candy. Another great photo op. However, on the little sidebar, I do notice from the Los Angeles Times, Dr. Ron Paul calls Obama's H1N1 swine flu program a, quote, total failure. So, we're hopping back to the geopolitics on MediaMonarchy.com. Inside bombs, payrolls, and the Daily Show of Force. Now, this first bit, and we're going to hear a little clip from, of course, Rachel Maddow, our good left cover friends over at General Electric. Largest bombing in Iraq in 2 years may have been an inside job.
In addition to the horrendous headlines from Afghanistan in the past 24 hours, America's other war has just made the front pages for the first time in months. Two synchronized suicide car bombs killed at least 155 people and wounded more than 500 people in central Baghdad yesterday. It was Baghdad's deadliest attack in more than 2 years. The bombs went off outside the Ministry of Justice and the Ministry of Public Works, as well as the provincial council offices for Baghdad. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki toured the site as rescuers carted off the dead and the wounded. Funerals for many of the dead were held today throughout the city. This is a really well-coordinated attack on an area in Baghdad that's supposed to be really well-protected. Both bombs were huge. Combined, they weighed almost 4,000 pounds. In order to reach their targets, the bombers driving these truck bombs had to pass through several checkpoints that were guarded by security forces. And those are security forces who were supposed to be using handheld devices that are designed to detect explosives. Brian Katulis, who's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and an all-around Iraq expert, told our producers today, quote, "You don't want to do this kind of attack without having someone on the inside. It implies infiltration of the government. If there is an objective, it is to send a message to whoever is in power that not everyone recognizes them as being in charge." The Iraqi government claims more than 75 people have already been arrested in connection with the bombing. And earlier today, Al-Qaeda's Islamic State of Iraq issued a statement taking credit for the bombing. We will keep you posted on any further developments.
Are you saying that shadowy players in the grand chessboard would actually stage terror events for their own political gain? That's ridiculous. So, again, we're on geopolitics, inside bombs, payrolls, and the Daily Show of Force, and it's going to be an ugly list of headlines, which I have to admit, in a way, has been showing up a lot more and more and more lately on MediaMonarchy.com. In a way, everything's speeding up, and I just kind of grab the headlines from my feed readers and throw them in the appropriate folders and then post them all up, and then we kind of sift through it, and you guys can hopefully help me data mine information as well. But I digress. Largest Iraq bombing in 2 years may have been inside job. More on this from the Associated Press. Twin suicide car bombs in Baghdad kill 136. But then that's, of course, just getting started. From Reuters, car bomb kills 90 in Pakistan as, of course, Hillary Clinton visits. Car bomb kills 100 in Pakistani city of Peshawar. That's from Breitbart. Bomb kills 92. That's from the AFP. And, of course, all as Hillary Clinton has been jaunting around. I believe I did glance and see earlier on Google News just a few moments ago is that she's, of course, hailing Israel's, you know, unprecedented concessions again on the grand chessboard. But isn't it fascinating that when our misleaders start to run around the world and grandstand and things start to blow up around them? Another note on Pakistan by way of Dawn.com. Pakistan moves for maritime body to prevent terror attacks. It's all terror now. All terror, all the time. From Press TV, out of Iran, ex-CIA agent Robert Baer confirms U.S. ties with Jundullah. Which, again, those are some of the bombings last week. And we, of course, noted through many different sources, Seymour Hersh and ex-CIA agents and major newspapers, that the U.S. was funding Jundullah. Robert Baer, of course, quasi 9/11 truther, the guy behind Syriana and I've got a whole raft of articles on Robert Baer on MediaMonarchy.com. However, moving down the list, Israel wants free warships from Germany. Amnesty International says Israel cuts Palestinian water. That's from the BBC. From Danger Room, in Israel, a key test of Obama's retooled missile shield. From Dot Connector UK, Rothschild Bolton, Israel has a right to preemptively strike Iran. And interestingly enough, from Raw Story, The Daily Show under fire for covering the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Can you believe they had the nerve to put a Palestinian on The Daily Show? Those videos are available. I don't have clips for you, and there were ones that I couldn't actually grab out of the page. My little downloader helpers and the add-ons and the browsers can't always get every video, but again, there's so much stuff out there. And I think it's also important to note that it's about time The Daily Show would have someone to represent the Palestinian side. After all, just the neocon fools like William Kristol and Ladine and all those guys that have been on that show. But anyway, Israelis at center of ecstasy drug trade. That coming from Haaretz out of Israel. We've got the mystery of the missing Iranian scientist. That's a nice, big, long, interesting report from UPI. Afghan police open fire at demonstration. That's from the AFP. And here's another biggie on the grand chessboard. Hamid Karzai's brother, you know, the president of Afghanistan, the guy who used to be, I believe, on the board of directors for UNICAL, his brother is on the CIA payroll. Where have we heard that before? Jeez, didn't we just mention something about Castro's sister being on the CIA payroll back in the day? Surprise, surprise. So, Hamid Karzai's brother, who's, of course, yeah, the drug kingpin, and that's, as we've noted before, and as you should know pretty damn well, that the god over all of this, the god that people are working for is gold, oil, and drugs. Afghan opium kingpin on CIA payroll. There's more from InfoWars and Raw Story and Raw Replay, but Reuters, like I said, Karzai's brother said to be on CIA payroll. That's from Reuters. New U.S. bases on the Black Sea. That's from Global Research. Czech President Klaus still holding out over the Lisbon Treaty. The Czech president seeming to be one of the few guys on the, again, to overuse the grand chessboard phrase, doesn't really seem to want to go along with the plan, whether it's on the Lisbon Treaty and the assimilation of all into the new world power of the European Union. He also doesn't buy the carbon debt of the anthropogenic global warming hysteria, where, again, regardless of what you think about global warming, do you think we can buy our way out of it by carbon indulgences to Gore and Rockefellers and private offshore international banksters? New U.S.-EU Energy Council to be set up early November. That's from EUObserver.com. Gordon Brown hopes to buy off Germany and France to make sure Tony Blair becomes the president of the new EU world power. There's also some bit from the BBC, blow to Blair's hopes of EU job, but I'm sure it's pretty much all but assured. And again, as you notice, things are moving quite quickly on the world stage, whether it's the Copenhagen Treaty coming up in December, or these new pacts and these new extradition pacts, or energy councils. I can't figure out if the rats are running for the door or what. Church of Scientology convicted of fraud in France. That's from Breitbart. Alleged intel advisor makes lurid claims about Prince Albert of Monaco. Now, this goes to courthousenews.com. And this story's kind of bizarre. But again, it all ties in when you look at our misleaders. their strange proclivities and the things that they're into. Now, of course, fittingly, this page won't load for me, so you're going to have to find it yourself. But again, alleged intel advisor makes lurid claims about Prince Albert of Monaco. And essentially, you know what it's about. It's about weird sex and drugs and the strange things that the elites do. Last few notes here on geopolitics. Japan shoots down missile in test near Hawaii. That's from spacewar.com. China says two were executed for Tibetan riots. That's from the Washington Post. And we wrap it up, and there's a 10.5-minute video from Financial Times, one of the great NWO mouthpieces in a way. And it's a nice little 10-minute interview with George Soros, where he says that China must be part of the New World Order. And of course they are. They will be. Don't worry. We're all going to get to be a part of the New World Order. So that's the ugly geopolitical posting, inside bombs, payrolls, and the Daily Show of Force. We're now going to move to interesting use of the pyramid and the symbolism. This article comes to us, of course, by way of the Wall Street Journal, and it's called At the Base of the Pyramid, Creating the Market for Poor Consumers. Like I said, this is from the Wall Street Journal, and I forget what guy wrote it, but he's some, you know, think tank muckety-muck guy who maybe even has some letters after his name, but it's all essentially the same message. But get a load of this. Around the world, 4 billion people are living in poverty, and Western companies are struggling to turn them into customers. For the past decade, business visionaries have argued that these people, dubbed the base of the pyramid, make up an enormous untapped market. Some of the world's biggest, savviest corporations have aimed to address their basic needs by selling them everything from clean water to electricity. But time and time again, the initiatives have quietly fizzled out. Why? Because these companies were looking at it all wrong. Put most simply, the base of the pyramid is not actually a market. True, those billions of low-income people have a lot in common, but they don't have two of the vital characteristics you need to have a consumer market. They haven't been conditioned to think that the products being offered are something one would even buy. And they haven't adapted their behaviors and budgets to fit the products into their lives. A consumer market is nothing less than a lifestyle built around a product. Think of an example close to home. In the 1970s, bottled water was a foreign idea to most Americans. It wasn't part of American consumers' lifestyle. It took decades for large numbers of consumers to accept the notion of buying something you could get for free out of a faucet and turn bottled water into a big business. For many poor consumers, paying for clean water or sanitation products just seems outlandish. Seems just as outlandish, rather. The answer? Companies must create markets, new lifestyles among poor consumers. They must make the idea of paying money for the product seem natural, and they must induce consumers to fit those goods into their long-held routines. We jump down to the bottom of this article from the Wall Street Journal, At the Base of the Pyramid, Creating the Market for Poor Consumers, where it says, one final thought. When marketing to the base of the pyramid, companies shouldn't be positive. They should be positive. Instead of telling consumers that a product will alleviate their hardships, companies should stress how the products will make their lives more enjoyable. There, my friends, is a pretty good summation of what the elite thinks of you. That even though you're dirt poor and your country, if it even got to be a first world nation, is pretty much being systematically deindustrialized and the middle class is going to be destroyed. And as we've said many, many times, as we see, you know, of course, military reaching their goals for the first time in a long, long time because the economy collapsed. The economy that's fake anyway. But when it all collapses, the only jobs that you'll get will be with the state, snitching on people and being a little corrupt crony. So I think that sums it up pretty well. That's pretty much what they think of you. You may be completely decimated and herded into compact cities, but we'll figure out a way to still sell you some kind of crap, you know, that isn't something silly like water and electricity, because, you know, you're going to have that stuff anyway. You're going to have to pay for that shit anyway. We're going to create a lifestyle for you to where you'd buy some shit you never would have in the first place. Pretty simple, really. But disturbing, and you should know. We're going to jump now for the remainder of this B-side episode of 147 from MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to jump over to the two sister sites. And first, we're going to hit FoodWorldOrder.com. Started this site several months ago. Actually, back in March, I started FoodWorldOrder.com. And we're going to hit a couple stories from there. The first being Binge and Purge. Unhappy meals, my friends. What we're going to hit first comes from Organic Consumers Organization, organicconsumers.org. And this is a slight alteration of their headline, but it still essentially hits the same point. Obama supports the food industrial complex, and all we get's a lousy White House garden. I'll admit it, I'm an unabashed fan of the First Lady. I read every article about the White House organic garden, and I go to Michelle's farmer market every Thursday. I'm a fan, and I'm a little jealous, too. She's managed to educate D.C. school children and provide farm-fresh food to state dinners. The garden I started at my daughter's D.C. public school this spring was abandoned to the office and maintenance staff this summer, then plowed under in a schoolyard renovation before school started in the fall, and has yet to feed anybody. Because I admire the First Lady's good example, I'm shocked. And again, this is the writer of the Organic Consumers Organization article. Shocked by the chemical agribusiness and biotech cheerleading of her husband's administration. From USDA and FDA appointments of biotech and chemical industry insiders to support for the preposterous idea that genetically modifying food GMs can feed the world, it's obvious that the Obama administration is happy to assist agribusiness in its quest for world domination. World domination sounds a little histrionic, doesn't it? But there's no other way to describe the profit-at-any-cost business model of companies like Monsanto that seek to patent and control access to seeds and food and decide for the world what we can eat. The question that faces humanity today is, shall we let Monsanto, Cargill, McDonald's, and a handful of other multinational corporations decide the future of food? Obama supports the food industrial complex, and all we get is a lousy White House garden. You will recall, perhaps, that we were covering the White House organic garden. You might also recall that the most recent update is that it's pretty much all ruined by some weird sludge in the garden that I think is essentially the Clintons' fault. And, of course, you know, fill in your own metaphorical, you know, fitting comment for that. And what we're also talking about, of course, is folks like Vilsack being a big agri guy, the revolving door. And, of course, Michael Taylor, former VP from Monsanto, being appointed by Obama to the FDA's new Food Safety Working Group. That's some change you should chew on really, really well. The last few notes here on this Binge and Purge posting on FoodWorldOrder.com are some more malnutritious meals. Interestingly enough, from The Guardian, McDonald's to quit Iceland as Big Mac costs rise. So I suppose that's some good news. Bad news from The Telegraph is that food will never be so cheap again. So essentially saying it's only going to get worse. The last note comes by way of Alex Constantine, and his is, I believe, a compilation of a few different articles, essentially all about junk food being, quote, as addictive as drugs. And there's more in there and the explanations around that. And you may have seen some of those articles floating around in the last few days, some new studies that, yeah, junk food, in a way, is like heroin. The other bit we're going to hit on foodworldorder.com is the great orange juice scam. This coming from the realfoodchannel.com. And I believe it's kind of a sister part to brasschecktv.com. But the great orange juice scam, one of the great scams of the industrial food cartel, is the so-called fresh orange juice sold in supermarkets. This one particularly galls me because for years when I was dirt poor and had very few food choices, I thought I was doing a healthy thing by buying fresh orange juice squeezed from Tropicana. Alyssa Hamilton has written a new book on the subject called Squeezed, What You Don't Know About Orange Juice.
Whenever we see an ad for orange juice, it usually includes words like 100% pure, not from concentrate, or even sunshine in a glass. Most of us think it's healthy juice made of fresh Florida oranges and chock full of vitamin C. A book says the OJ in your glass could be chock full of other stuff as well, like chemicals, artificial flavor, even sugar. The book is called Squeezed, What You Don't Know About Orange Juice, and its author, Alyssa Hamilton, joins us now with more on this. So I think it's true that people who enjoy a glass of orange juice think it's pure, it's good for your health. You say not so. How come?
Well, I'll correct you. I don't say that there are artificial additives or sugar added, but certainly products such as Not From Concentrate, which is marketed as a higher quality, fresher product than, say, From Concentrate, is a heavily processed product.
So tell me more about that. When you investigated Not From Concentrate, you're right. I think people think that they're getting better quality. So what actually is in Not From Concentrate?
Well, the juice is stored in these huge million-gallon aseptic storage tanks. Mm. And when the juice goes into the tanks, so that it can keep, it has to be deaerated, which essentially it has to be stripped of oxygen. When you strip the juice of oxygen, you also strip it of flavor-provided chemicals, natural chemicals to the orange juice. So the juice companies then hire flavor and fragrance companies, same ones that make high-end perfumes and colognes.
Fragrance?
Fragrance companies to manufacture flavor pack to put back into the juice to make it taste fresh.
And if the juice didn't have these flavor packs and these fragrances injected into it, what would the taste be? Would it be completely devoid of that orange, tangy orange taste?
It would taste like sugar water, essentially. It would be the natural sugar solids. This isn't added sugar that I'm talking about, but it wouldn't taste like an orange. It has the flavor removed once it's stripped of the oxygen.
The great orange juice scam. Some of the other notes we have below the fold, if you will, are some reality checks. Again, this coming from therealfoodchannel.com. One, there's more vitamin C in a single orange than in a full glass of industrial orange juice. Number two is truly fresh orange juice only lasts a few days. If it lasts for weeks or months even, it's an industrial product. And the third and final note is, until the Florida orange growers launched a campaign in the early 20th century to deal with their surplus crop, the only people who drank orange juice were Floridians who had a tree in their backyard. There's nothing particularly healthy or natural about drinking orange juice, and the industrial product is a total waste of money. So definitely some juice for thought, if you will, there. I'm not sure exactly. I'm not coming down one side or the other on this. The book, again, Squeezed, What You Don't Know About Organic, or rather, orange juice. Organic probably doesn't come into play at all. I have the Amazon store linked up for you, but the book is kind of spendy. The cheapest one is like $20, and it's a hardcover, and it's from the Yale Agrarian Studies series. So if anybody can steal a PDF or something, let me know. So that's the last thing we're going to hit on foodworldorder.com, and now we're going to jump over to the other new sister site. It's called cyberspacewar.com, and I started this site just back in June. And again, as everything is accelerating, so many things happening in the world that ties in with what we just generally umbrella refer to as cyberspace war, the coming cyberspace war. So the first thing we're going to hit, again, is an ugly list of headlines posted up on October 29th on Thursday. It's the DEF CON 1029, Smart Grid, NSA Super Centers, and Surveillance. The first from ArsTechnica.com, Obama announces stimulus funding for the smart grid. The Deutsche Press Agency has Obama investing $3.4 billion in U.S. electricity grid. Threat level has the Fed's smart grid race leaving cybersecurity in the dust. And what ties all this together and what I'll point you to yet again is a great breakdown on the so-called smart grid. And that's episode 103 from CorbettReport.com, The Smart Grid Cometh. And it does, and so much more. Down the list, cyber attacks, espionage now, sabotage soon, again from Ars Technica. The New American.com has the disturbing NSA super centers to store Americans' private data permanently. I thought that was just those Republican guys that were doing that. Oh, that's right. The agenda rolls onward. Government to build $1.5 billion cybersecurity data center. That's from Federal Computer Week. DHS to announce cyber merger. That's from DODBuzz.com. Scan of internet uncovers thousands of vulnerable embedded devices. Again, from Threat Level. Guardian, you know, the newspaper and online, they lost 500,000 resumes. That, of course, has people's personal information on them. That's coming from the register.co.uk, and the article is really called Guardian Loses 500,000 CVs, which is, I believe, the Brit speak for a resume, and something like curriculum vitae, I think. Stupid American. But you gotta love these guys. Again, sometimes the politics are a little hinky for me, but more monkey wrenching the New World Order, please. ISP removes fake U.S. chamber press release from the internet. That's from Threat Level, and then the follow up that we got from Talking Points Memo that, you know, will maybe make a little more sense to you. U.S. Chamber of Commerce suing the Yes Men for commercial identity theft. So go to, I believe it's theyesmen.com or .org. And there's even a documentary. They basically pose as public officials and give statements and press statements or demonstrations that pretty much fly completely in the face of the held beliefs of whatever organization they're impersonating. So here's a recent stunt of the Yes Men, but then it kind of went awry. Here you go.
Clean coal is a technology that has not only not been proven, it basically doesn't exist. And it's just obvious we have to put our money, it's the same business decision, we have to put our money where the proof is.
Okay, this is I'm Eric Wolfschlegel. I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This is not an official U.S. Chamber of Commerce event. So I don't know what pretenses you're here. I know some of you in the press world, but this is a fraudulent press activity and a stunt.
Who are you,
so, really, sir? If you have any questions, you're welcome to direct them to me at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Who are you, really, sir?
And do you have a business card? Are you with the U.S. Chamber?
I do. We can discuss afterward.
Okay. Can I see your business card?
Can I see yours?
Are you here representing the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I work there, and you do not look familiar to me at all.
Could I see your business card? Could I see your business card?
Yes, I am. This guy does not represent the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Okay? No. This is not an official Chamber of Commerce. This is not... Yeah, got it. So they're misrepresenting the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Sir,
if anyone has any questions and wants to talk to the real Chamber of Commerce, they can direct your questions to me. What's your position?
If you would like to have a press conference, you can have your own press conference,
sir. What is your position?
But you can't come in here and barge in and interrupt a press conference.
What is your position?
I don't know what... Sorry?
What is your position at the Chamber of Commerce?
I just spoke my position.
Good. What is your title? Your official title of U.S. Chamber?
I'm the assistant to Mr. Donahue.
Okay. This guy is a fraud. He's lying. This is, you know, a stunt that I've never seen before.
I think this is the stunt.
Does this mean that the Chamber of Commerce
whatever this gentleman here said to you today is irrelevant, it's not factual, this is a fraudulent press conference, okay? He's misrepresenting the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
You gotta go watch the whole video, that'll really kind of put it into perspective for you, but let me kind of explain it a little more, and again, hop into the Talking Points memo article. Calling last week's hoax by the Yes Men nothing less than commercial identity theft masquerading as social activism, the Chamber of Commerce is suing the prankster group and its allies for trademark infringement, unfair competition, and false advertising. Link to Mother Jones source. The Yes Men, actors Jacques Servin and Igor Vamos, who also use the names Andy Bicklebaum and Mike Bonanno, respectively, last week held a fake press conference in Washington, D.C., along with the activists from Avaz Action Factory, in which they impersonated chamber executives and announced that the group had shifted its opposition to real efforts at tackling global warming. A press release announcing the event fooled Reuters and other news outlets into reporting that the chamber had changed its stance. The chamber's complaint charges that the stunt was an effort to promote the new Yes Men movie, The Yes Men Fix the World. In the wake of the prank, the chamber said it would be asking law enforcement authorities to investigate. That suggestion of a criminal probe doesn't seem to have materialized, but the chamber may still get its day in court. Again, another fine case of what Jelly Biafra called monkey wrenching the New World Order. Further down the list, here on cyberspacewar.com, a nation's first open-source election software released. That's from Threat Level. The SEC and DHS need web backup, GAO says. And that's from Reuters, essentially that the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Department of Homeland Security need more computer power. This all according to the General Accounting Office. As we've heard all these drums beating for, you know, cybercom and cybersecurity and all these things, like I told you a million times, they have an E-Patriot Act or an I-Patriot Act, whatever you want to call it, essentially for the web and the whole cyberspace world, sitting on the shelf waiting for their catalyzing catastrophic event to be able to ram it down our throats, and it would pretty much be the end of the internet as we know it. So there's lots of people talking about it, and so hopefully this won't turn into some case where it's like, see, we said we needed to do something, but you darn bureaucrats didn't listen. It's all incompetence and just red tape. It's not part of an agenda in any way, shape, or form, but I digress. Again, the SEC and DHS need a web backup. After net neutrality, will we need Google neutrality? Again, from ArsTechnica.com. From Danger Room, however, DARPA looks to send the internet into orbit. But on a different note, as long as we're now out into space, from RogueGovernment.com and all around the world, the Baltic meteorite that was a flaming hoax.
And first off, the story that's got so many of you talking on our website and also on our YouTube page. A little town in Latvia has found itself the center of attention for scientists, sensation seekers, and even special forces today. A mysterious crater 20 meters wide and 5 meters deep has appeared not far from a residential area. Well, one of the local residents filmed what he called the consequences of a powerful blast. This video later became one of the most popular on the internet, as I mentioned there. Firefighters and police worked at the scene where the crater was first believed to be the result of a meteorite strike. Later, the owner of the property reportedly started taking money from anyone who wanted to see the object up close. Well, some experts viewed the incident with skepticism from the start, though, and quickly labeled it as a publicity stunt. They claimed the hole was dug with spades and aluminium powder was placed at the crater's base. The country's government insisted that if the event was proved to be a hoax, the organizers would face legal action. Now the story's taken another turn as a Latvian telecom company tonight said it took responsibility for the incident in an official statement.
The so-called meteorite was our initiative. We wanted Latvian society to believe in itself, to believe in opportunity, to be the focus of the whole world's attention with the help of one interesting and unique news story. We're ready to compensate all the money the government spent on the investigation of incident.
Is it the inspiration or of Orson Welles and the War of the World broadcasts that were here, of course, on Halloween and whatever other sinister forces swirl around? There sure are a lot of hoaxes going on lately. And I think it's interesting, and this is one of the main things that I try and do with the sites and the show, is look at the mass amount of information, all the stuff that is essentially open source information, and just scan over it all, and you can look at it, and you can start to literally see patterns emerge. And it's not in some kind of beautiful mind, freaked out, you know, Darren Aronofsky pie type way. But it's there, and it's pretty tangible. But the Balloon Boy hoax, we just hit the Yes Men hoax, there was the meteorite hoax. And who knows what other hoaxes are coming out of sleeves as we speak. But let's hit the last few bits here on the DEFCON 1029, Smart Grid, NSA Supercenters, and Surveillance. And, oh, we just mentioned asteroids, but here's one from, again, ArsTechnica.com. Mars can wait. NASA should try landing on asteroids first. And there's the, you know, the movie poster of whatever silly movie that is where they try and do it with Bruce Willis or something. Some rocket called the Ares 1X was originally stuck on the launch pad, but then the next day blasted off after their second attempt. We've got more on that from theregister.co.uk, exactly what this rocket that's now orbiting around the cyberspace war is doing. I'm not exactly sure. I think we did mention this on the main show yesterday on 147, but again, the pilots who missed their airport site computer distraction, those were the guys who flew hundreds of miles past their destination while they were piloting a commercial aircraft because they were playing on their laptops. I think they've now basically been booted and stripped of their license. There's a video by way of Raw Story and Raw Replay, and it's a new army robot that walks like a human. Not going to play any clip for you, but this reminds us of several months ago when we hit the, what was it, the Big Dog? Something from like Boston Dynamics, one of the new amazing robot makers. And essentially, yeah, I mean, it'll crawl around and move, and its legs are amazing. In that the Big Dog video that we hit several months ago, you could kick it and you could see it righting itself that it would never fall, and they put it on like a sheet of ice and it would slip around, but it was still able to. It was really kind of strange. And sometimes, and some folks, when they saw the video, looked at it, it almost looked like, you know, if you put two dudes in like a horse costume, you know, the front legs and the back legs. It almost looked like that because it moved so lifelike. And again, it's not the technology itself that's the problem. It's who the hell's hands it's going to be in. So speaking of that, the last note here on this DEFCON rundown, and I think this was yesterday or the day before, but needless to say, the internet turned 40 years old. And we are trying to use it to the best of our abilities, and that would essentially be to get the word out about all the things that are going on. And it's really that. It's an information war, and it's a war for your consciousness. So don't lose that battle. You know, that's why we're here doing this. That's why I'm on the, not on the radio. It's a pre-record here. I'm at home by myself on a Halloween night. And again, this is the scariest thing that I can do, is try and tell you what's going down. The second post on cyberspace war kind of follows up what we hit last week, and that would be the CIA to monitor internet chatter for anti-government sentiment. Following on that disturbing yet not surprising path is a new article from Tom Burkhart at Anti-Fascist Calling, Mind Your Tweets, CIA and EU Building Social Network Surveillance Systems. Social networking sites and applications such as Facebook, Twitter, and their competitors can facilitate communication and info sharing amongst diverse groups and individuals is by now a cliche. It should come as no surprise, then, that the secret state and the capitalist grifters whom they've served have zeroed in on the explosive growth of these technologies. One can be certain, however, securocrats aren't tweeting their restaurant preferences or finalizing plans for work, or rather after-work drinks. Nope. Researchers on both sides of the Atlantic are as busy as proverbial bees, providing a, quote, total information, end quote, surveillance system, one that will, so they hope, provide police and security agencies with what they euphemistically call, quote unquote, actionable intelligence. Total information, does that sound familiar to you? In this context, the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks.org published a remarkable document on October 4th by the INDECT Consortium, the Intelligence Information System Supporting Observation, Searching, and Detection for Security of Citizens in Urban Environment. Hardly a catchy acronym, but simply put, INDECT is working to put a human face on the billions of emails, text messages, tweets, and blog posts that transit cyberspace every day. Perhaps your face. All right. Interestingly enough, just as I was reading the last paragraph of this article, CIA and EU building social network surveillance system, my phone rang. And so I got that, and now we jump to 30 or 40 minutes later. So, okay, where were we? We were finishing up that article, and now, essentially, my friends, it's the last story we're going to cover on this B-Side episode 147 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's coming from CyberspaceWar.com, originally from the Los Angeles Times. Pulling the TV cord, yet staying plugged in. A small, but apparently growing number of people are cutting the television service connections from cable, satellite, and telephone companies in favor of viewing their picks over the computer. There's a lot of names thrown out in this article, and I've trimmed it down, so you're going to hear references to, like, last names that you didn't actually properly hear introduced. But again, I'm just giving you the smaller bits and providing the avenues and the context and the links for you to go do your own research. So, having said that, pulling the TV cord yet staying plugged in, jazz musician Bill Cunliffe loves television, but he doesn't watch it on a TV set. I can watch anything I want, anytime I want, on my bottom-of-the-line Mac PowerBook. Cunliffe, 53, is one of a growing number of TV viewers who get all their programs via the internet. For reasons that include saving money, convenience, personal choice, and a hatred of commercials, these viewers are cutting the cord from cable, satellite, and telephone suppliers of TV service, and even throwing away the rabbit ears and other antennas that brought in over-the-air broadcasts, which we'll, of course, mention they don't bring in over-the-air broadcasts anymore. It's all been hijacked, essentially, with the digital conversion, but again, I digress. Quote, the idea that you can come home and your entertainment choices are dictated on what some entertainment channel decides is not for me, said video game producer Chris Cotting, whose Venice apartment has a 52-inch Sony TV that's used only for video games and DVDs. I really like the concept of having something in your mind that you want to watch, and then going to the computer and watching it. Shows, of course, are also available unauthorized on underground sites that are the bane of the TV as well as the movie industry. You can download just about anything you want right after it's broadcast, said one user of these sites who asked that his name not be used. My wife asks for a show and I can just go on and get it for her. Cunliffe, who said he sticks to authorized sites, began watching online when TV went entirely digital in June. Up until then, he used rabbit ears to bring in broadcast stations. After the switchover, he can no longer receive some of his favorite stations, even with a digital converter box. He was ready to give up on TV until he discovered how easy it was to get programs online. Now he's ready to move up from his laptop screen. I'm going to go out and buy the cheapest flat-screen monitor I can find and plug it in. I'm watching more TV than ever. Now, there is a sort of update/rebuttal to this cord cutting from TVbythenumbers.com, where they say that without data, the LA Times writes the story it wanted anyway. There seem to be a few memes that persist in the TV media world, even though there's no data to back them up. One is the Oprah ratings down because of Obama endorsement. Another is, look at all the people cutting the cord, i.e. canceling their subscription TV service. Recently, it's been spun as an after effect of the economic problems. In the Los Angeles Times article that we just hit for you, cord cutting is touted as a combo of tech and consumer choice, which of course it is, and the anecdotal examples are charming, but the problem is the data just doesn't support the fact that it's a general phenomenon. In fact, total subscriptions to cable, satellite, telco, TV services continue to grow slowly, as they have for many years. Who knows what'll happen in the future, but it's not happening now. They have a link, their own flashback link there, to something previously back in September 2009 on TVbythenumbers.com, where it says telecom TV services grow at the expense of cable systems. But basically, what are we saying here? That these two supposedly opposing pieces both come to the same conclusion, and that is, quote, I'm watching more TV than ever. And of course, it's Halloween night, my friends, and that's going to do it for this B-side episode 147 of MediaMonarchy.com, and I probably will go watch something scary or appropriate on television. We'll see. Thank you guys for listening so much. Again, getting in touch with me, spreading the word about the sites and the shows. It's amazing that, again, here on Saturday night, October 31st, 2009, I can record something at home and post it up, and all you guys can get it and hear it pretty much almost immediately, and contact me and send information, and it's getting to be more and more, and it's actually harder to try and keep up and correspond with all the folks who get in touch with me. So of course I say don't get mad if I don't respond, but I'm working on it. I'm trying. I'm a one-man band here. The way we're going to wrap up this B-side 147 is, appropriately enough, a song called Satan Rejected My Soul, and it's from Morrissey's 1997 album Maladjusted. You will probably hear more Morrissey from me in the month to come, as I'm very excited that he's going to be playing in Portland, Oregon on November 30th. So, appropriately enough, on this Halloween night, my friends, I tell you to not only get active or get radioactive, as I tell you after most of the shows, is to also just be careful and be awake and be safe and be cognizant and be compassionate and just... we're under attack, and things don't really look very good. I'm not freaking out or hauling up in the bunker or everything, but again, you can kind of tell the general level of things is reaching a chaotic point. So please, you know, just take care of each other. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Take care.
Rejected my soul. He knows my kind. He won't be dragged down. He's seen my face around. He knows heaven doesn't seem to be my home. So I must find somewhere else to go. I must find somewhere else to go. So take it, please. It's free. You'll never see all the fun in life it's cost me. Satan rejected my soul. As low as he goes, he never quite goes this low. He's seen my face around. He knows heaven doesn't seem to be my home. So I must find somewhere else to go. Find somewhere else to go. So take it, please. It's really sly. Come on, come on, oh, come on, come on.
you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say about on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.